Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's weekly dedicated design show. I'm Henry Reese Sheridan. On today's show...
15, 20 years ago, everybody was doing a lot of illustration and less photography. But I do think there's still an opportunity for very good editorial illustration to break through.
We talk to two leading illustrators about the past, present and future of the art form. Next...
Creative areas, creative people inspires us a lot in terms of how we design the frames, how we use colours and patterns.
We take a tour around Vienna's Neubau district with the director of an innovative eyewear company named after it. Plus, Paul Desvart, founder of Another Country, tells us about his new work series for the Modern Office. All that coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. Illustrators play a critical but often overlooked role in modern journalism, bringing the words of the best writing and editing to life. Much has been said about how the digital revolution has changed the jobs of writers and photographers, but we wanted to know more about how illustration has been affected. To find out, we spoke to two of the leading lights in the field. Laszlo Kovacs straddles the digital divide. He's illustrated some of the most august print titles on newsstands, including the Wall Street Journal, National Geographic, and De Volkskrant. But he also currently works as the creative director of the digital file transfer service WeTransfer. Idel Rodriguez is a Cuban-American artist who has illustrated for The New York Times, Time Magazine, and The New Yorker, among others. He's also exhibited his work in art galleries all over the world. So, Guy, thank you very much for joining me. Maybe we can begin with you describing how and when your careers as illustrators began and what the early years were like. Where were you and who did you work for? Laszlo, let's begin with you.
Thanks for having me. Well, I really don't have a recollection of when I started because I've been drawing all the time, basically. So I guess that the first time that I was conscious of me being an illustrator, even not knowing really what an illustrator was, is when I was around 14 years old, and my professor called my parents to tell them that maybe I would be better in an art school. So that was my first introduction on something that I was already doing, but I wasn't conscious of doing.
And Idel, I know that your interest in art and your early career began in the context of you being a young immigrant from Cuba. How did that affect your development?
I think mostly what it did is it made me want to do something purposeful here in the United States. I think I remember from the time I was 11 or 12 thinking that I had to do something with my career so that what my parents did made everything worth it. I actually first started out thinking I wanted to be an architect, and then I went to Brooklyn to study at Pratt Institute, and then I went more into the painting area. And then by the end of college, I had developed a bit of an illustration portfolio, and I took it out to various places around New York City, like the New York Times, Village Voice, places like that, and I started getting work soon after I graduated.
And Idel, sticking with you, you say that you took your portfolio, that you've developed in university to the New York Times, the Village Voice, very much legacy print publications. Were those the kind of editorial outlets that you aspired to work for as an illustrator?
I wasn't really interested in being an advertising illustrator at the time. I always liked doing work with opinion that covered current events and things like that. I was always very interested in history, social studies, things like that. So that was my interest. And once I found magazines were a place for that, that's where I headed.
And Laszlo, how about yourself? What were the first paid jobs that you got as an illustrator?
I think the non-paid work was a magazine that I created in the school. So I was kind of like the director of the magazine and I did the illustrations. And then at 18 years old, I started my own company, design studio in the north of Spain. And then I would do some illustrations, but I wasn't really, really confident about my style. I was trying out different things. And I would say that the first time that I got a real client was when I started working for the Volkskrant, which is a newspaper here in the Netherlands. And I started doing spot illustrations, and I really, really enjoyed the exercise of having to help and support the story with a very concrete image, and that hooked me into editorial work for illustration. That I would say that would be the very first paid commission.
So it's interesting that both of you got your start in print editorial work. Now, obviously, that's a field that we're very interested in and a champion of at Monocle. But I wonder, as illustrators, how have you experienced print and the kind of illustration work that they're commissioning change over time? How have you seen the print industry change as illustrators? Maybe we can begin with you, Idel.
I still feel many times that the best way to get into illustration is through editorial, either through print or online or blogs or websites, because it's usually the places that give young illustrators a chance right away. You can easily meet people in these fields. It's a little harder to find who an art director for an ad agency is, but it's very easy to find an editorial art director. I was also an art director at Time Magazine, so I have a little bit of experience as an art director. There used to be a lot more magazines and a lot more illustration being hired at that time. And then over time, the magazines have gotten less magazines, but they still do pretty interesting work. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, everybody was doing a lot of illustration and less photography. And nowadays, it seems they're using more photography and stock photography. But I do think there's still an opportunity for very good editorial illustration to break through. And in my case, my work has gotten to be pretty well known in terms of starting discussions, creating a storyline and things like that. So a lot of my clients use my work on covers, and I think that's changed a lot of what I do.
And Laszlo, as your career has developed, you've branched out, continuing to work for some of the most prestigious print publications in the world, but also working for a lot of digital outlets and private companies. Was that a reaction to perhaps a limitation that you sensed in sticking with print and developing your career?
I actually didn't plan it. I think that I've been always interested in illustration, of course. So if I would have to define myself, I would say that I'm an illustrator by heart since I was a kid. But I've been always very curious about technology. So it developed very naturally. It developed in a way that I remember that one of the first side projects that I had was helping out my friend Juan Carlos Camaert in Barcelona. He created this platform called Pulga.com. And Pulga.com started right after the release of the first iPhone. We are both fanboys of Apple, but we were a little bit disappointed with the standard wallpapers that you would find on your iPhone. So we started drawing, just for fun, our own wallpapers. And then, because we were friends with some illustrators, we would reach out to them and say, hey, you know, we have this side project and would you like to participate? Would you like to create a wallpaper so we can make our phones even more prettier? I would say that was the first time that I was working on both disciplines at the same time. But I've been working for companies, as you said. I've been working also for startups. I was very, very curious about you know, how the whole movement of startups started in the Netherlands. So during my design disciplines, I would also keep an eye on other illustrators, and I would commission illustrators also as an art director.
And Idel, you've exhibited your work, I think, throughout your career in numerous Whitewall contemporary art galleries. You continue to do so. Do you feel that as an illustrator, you're in a bit of a strange place between being an artist and being a graphic designer? How do you view the role of the illustrator in the ecosystem of contemporary media?
It's not strange to me, because I just feel that's what I've always done. I think it might be strange to other people, or even when I was in college, some teachers thought I just had to make a choice. Am I a painter? Am I an illustrator? Am I this? Am I that? I've always just continued to do what I wanted to do at any moment. So if I want to design a cover for a book cover, I'll just design that and I'll do the lettering and everything. And if I want to make a painting, I make a painting, I have a show. It makes perfect sense to me, but I can see how it can be a lot of different things to different people. I think all the different disciplines inform each other. There might be a technique that I find while painting that then shows up in illustration later on, and then back and forth, some content from an illustration might end up becoming part of a painting. I think that's the best way for me to grow, is to do both. And usually my paintings are maybe 2 or 3 years ahead of what's in my illustrations, because that's where I discover new things and then they show up later on in my illustration work.
And Laszlo, I want to talk in a little bit more detail about your current role, because I think it's a role that people might not necessarily expect someone with an illustration background to occupy. So you're the creative director at WeTransfer, which is a file transferring tech company. How did you land that gig, and how does your illustration background tie into it?
So before being the creative director at WeTransfer, I was working in an innovation design studio called Present Plus. And Present Plus got acquired by WeTransfer about a year ago. So that's how I landed my job in here. Now, you know, for many people, it's surprising, right? Like, I come from the illustration world. Although I had, you know, my own company in Spain, back in Spain, I would do design. I would help companies develop their communications. But what I'm just finding out is that because I developed this kind of like secret language, which is drawing, I think that that was capital for me to connect with my team and to connect with designers in order to express and in order to encapsulate an idea that they would like to develop into a product. So in that sense, I keep drawing every time. So if you come to WeTransfer, you will see around and you look around and in every like whiteboard, there's a character or there is something that I've been drawing. I have this tendency of drawing every day. It's kind of like breathing for me. So in that sense, I think that the fact that I've been always drawing, that helped me greatly into being a better communicator of ideas that I want to push forward. And that's why for me, it doesn't feel that alien to be an illustrator and a creative director at the same time. At the end, you know, we're touching on the same points. It's about solving problems most of the times, or trying to communicate or to bring a certain tone and communication to the projects and products that we are developing here at WeTransfer. So it feels very natural. And I think that since WeTransfer also has a great connection, so because, yes, we are a file transfer service, but we have this other soul, which is we are constantly looking for new creatives and featuring them and our wallpapers, but also we have this blog called This Works, and we also tell the stories behind the wallpapers. So in a way, I'm still connected to the illustration community and the art community.
And my final question is one for both of you, which is, knowing everything that you do about the illustration industry now, what advice would you give to a young person thinking about going into illustration in terms of where they should train, how they should train, and what the first steps they should take to get their careers kicked off should be? Idel, if I could begin with you.
For almost anyone that wants to become an illustrator, the first step is to go directly to an art school, an art college, and get, you know, instead of a general university, get 4 years of good art college training in the basics of drawing, painting, and all those things. I think a lot of people overlook that. I teach students, and they don't realize how important it is to learn the basics of drawing and get that squared up. And then beyond that is, once they develop their work, is to not be shy, to go out there, show it to people, get feedback, listen to it, return with more work, and then it slowly happens, you know. But it does take years after you leave school for things to develop. And what happens a lot of times is people quit very fast, or they go into other fields. And usually the ones that are left as full-time illustrators are the ones that do stick it out.
And Laszlo, what about you?
I'm totally with Edel. I think that we are both from a different, probably, generation. You know, I studied in the art school and I did a lot of disciplines. I think that that helped me greatly, not only illustration, but painting and design and sculpture. I think that that gave me a lot of confidence into moving forward. So that would be one thing, and I totally agree with Edel. But then I would also say that just keep drawing and don't be so worried about your style. There is a great need of different angles, of different flavors of illustration. And now, you know, every digital company or every startup needs new ways to communicate their own products and ideas. And sometimes I see a lot of uniformity, but I think that the future is for those who are very confident of their own style, and they develop it slowly without, you know, having a goal. Just let yourself get acquaintance with your own style. And I think that with that attitude, you have a lot of success in the future.
Laszlo Kovács and Idel Rodriguez there. Over to Austria now. Neubau Eyewear takes its name from the famed 7th district of Vienna. The area itself is an eclectic mix of old and new. Ornate buildings from the 1900s soar over the heads of short blocky houses from the 1600s. Old school brew pubs are nestled against organic superfood shops, and construction workers stride past concept stores. Monocle's Susan Stone explored the area with Neubau Eyewear's director Daniel Lichtor to find out how this neighbourhood of contradictions inspired the brand's design vision and philosophy.
Hi, I'm Daniel Lichtor. I'm in charge of the brand Neubau Eyewear.
Okay, and so where are we?
We are in Neubau, actually. It's the 7th district of beautiful Vienna.
In Neubau, it seems to me very different from other parts of Vienna.
It's a mix, you know, like people are very clear in what they stand for. If it's politics, so this is like a green district, it's 360 degrees, you know? It's like they like to go out, they have a certain expectations if they go out, in terms of what they get, food, drinks. If they shop, they got a certain expectation, so they want more independent labels than like the big commercial chains or department stores, and this is what you find here, also culture-wise. So it's small galleries, small ateliers, and also the museum's quarter is here.
How does that reflect in the brand?
It's the inspiration of the brand. So what we see here in terms of creative spots, creative areas, creative people inspires us a lot. So in terms of how we use colors and patterns, how we design the frames, how we set up the full communication concept, which has to be genuine as well, and this is very important to us. And now we cross Neustiftgasse. This is like now the center of Neubau starts, kind of. So you have many agencies here as well, and then first cafes are coming. And on the left-hand side, we have the really, very old part, so the Spittelberg. And you see it in the houses, they are completely different. Urban gardening on the left, Salatpiraten. So you can find this in Vienna and Neubau as well.
So this is another part of Neubau. As you said, it's a green district.
Right.
Voting green, yep. The Green Party, environmentally minded. And that's something you're trying to do now as well with the new line that you have. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sustainability was always important to us, actually. And what we did is we created a new material for the plastic frames and launched it in April. It's just more sustainable than the other plastic was, as we use like castor oil instead of mineral oil to create the raw material. And in general, the whole product equipment is kind of sustainable, like the case is made of celluloid, so paper-based. The microfiber is made of recycled PET bottles. The packaging itself is made of recycled paper and is reusable.
Neubau was part of a larger eyewear concern, and it's a one-year-old, the brand, I believe. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about whether the connection and how what Neubau brings to the larger parent company?
Right, so we belong to Silhouette, or the main goal was to reach a different target audience. And Silhouette is a bit older, very elegant, very premium, high-end in terms of price point as well, a bit conservative, and you don't reach people like we are with this brand. So instead of trying to get those people on board, we created a new brand for certain progressive and creative people. So now we're coming to the commercial center of the district, Neubaugasse, and you see it already. Here, Schnitzelwirt. This is very old school. It's like the. Did you see the schnitzel he had on this plate? It was huge. It was like 2 kilograms of pork. But it looked good. And this is a place where like really local people, working class people go and have their lunch. Or there was a breakfast actually, or no, it was lunch, but it's 11:30, so early lunch. I'm pretty sure the guy started working at 5 in the morning. Yeah, that's cool. Let's go that way. So this corner is new to me. And here, look, Stahl und Alubau, Schlosserei. Very old.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Metalworks, keys.
Could be a great bar. Will be. Or a shop. A concept store. Selling superfoods.
When you think about eyewear design, I mean, glasses haven't changed that much since they were invented, really. How do you kind of evolve from that? Add your own twist. What's the approach?
Exactly. What we do, and this is kind of our motto as well in terms of design language, is that we take design classics and interpret them our way. So because you can't change certain things, as you said, you have cat eyes, you have pantos, rounds, but you can make something unique out of that. You know? And this is what we try to do, but like creating an iconic is not so easy. You don't just do that, so it just happens. And that's what we strive for. But until then, we try to interpret classical designs our way, and we look what trends are as well. You know? Further yeah. questions?
No, I don't think so.
I enjoyed the walk, to be honest. It was fun, and I saw this one street I've never been to.
Good, so you also saw something new.
Yeah.
Daniel Lichter there, director of Neubau Eyewear, speaking to Monocle contributor Susan Stone in Vienna. Another Country is a furniture company that draws upon the traditions of Shaker, Scandinavian and Japanese furniture making, giving them a contemporary twist for the modern home. Recently, the company presented a new modular desk system geared towards the modern workplace. I met the company's founder, Paul De Zwart, at Clerkenwell Design Week to find out more.
I'm Paul De Zwart. I'm the founder and director of Another Country. We are at Clerkenwell Design Week at Design Fields.
And more specifically, we're at the Another Country stand here. What can we see in front of us?
We're sitting on a Daybed Series 1, which is one of our classic pieces that we launched back in 2010-11 when we founded the company. But we're looking at our new product, which is a working sort of desk system called the Work Series, which is new and debuting at Clerkenwell Design Week this week. And this is a modular system of a work table that can be installed in offices, particularly creative spaces, that are seeking more domestic flair or feeling or look and feel to their office furniture. It can be applied to for canteen use as well. So it's quite a flexible system. And we have long customized our existing furniture collections for trade applications, so to speak. So this is a way of formalizing what we have done for a long time already.
How do you think about the principles which can be applied to design objects across different contexts? What remains the same in terms of your method of thinking?
We approach it from our brand perspective. So we abide by and live by a set of values and an ethos that has defined the brand since its inception. So even when we apply our work and design to a trade table, in this case, we imbue it with the same kind of philosophy. So we want to bring a sense of tactility and warmth and true materials to the workplace. It has to be efficiently designed as well, so that's easy to assemble or transport. But ultimately, you need to be able to relate to your table or to your furniture for that matter, which is, I think, an elevated process whereby you are interacting with the material and the design with an eye toward a daily experience, but also towards longevity. And one of the key things that underpin our brand is longevity. And we achieve that both through the manufacture process, i.e. to make things that last, but also through the design process, to design things that last aesthetically. Because one of the big issues affecting this industry, as many other industries, is the fact that things get discarded too quickly. They can't be repaired, refurbished. So one of the things that we look to achieve with this table is not just to applying the sort of values of the brand to its domesticity, but also making it last through its manufacturing process and the fact that it can be refurbished over years to come.
From a business perspective, maybe you can take me back to when Another Country was founded and just tell me how it's grown up to this point.
We started the brand, or I started the business, really with a simple stool out of which grew a series of pieces, which we called Series 1 to this day. And more than looking to set up a furniture company, it was more about expressing an ethos and a set of values in three-dimensional form. So I'm not a designer maker. I am a person who has a creative heart to his character, but I'm also someone who really believes in brands and also believe in the validity of ideas and expressing those through different means. So either it could be a magazine like Monaco, could be a piece of furniture like the United Country Table, say. And that was the starting point. Now, we approach our design really from a domestic point of view. So we design really for an end consumer, for the home. But our 40% of our business, this is 6 years on, is trade. So we work with designers, we work with brands for their spaces, for their retail spaces, for their cafes. We work with small to medium-sized projects, and hopefully over time these will get bigger. But again, the thing that we always stick with and look at and design from and are inspired by are the same values that led to the design and the creation of the brand, you know, 6 years ago.
And in connection to that, what role do design fairs, but in particular Clerkenwell Design Week, where we're sat, what role do these events play in terms of the growth of your business? Is it something that you turn up to basically because you kind of feel a sense of obligation, or does it have real utilitarian value for you?
Well, that's a very good question, and every brand asks this question every time they go to a fair. You know, we don't tend to get orders written up at fairs. I mean, some businesses, some fairs do have that element to them. Ours don't, or not in my experience. So we do question the value of them. I mean, they're not cheap. You know, take all the setup time as well as obviously the rent of the space itself. You know, you can see, look at it two ways. Either you seek a direct ROI from your investment, or you see it as part of your marketing exercise. It's about, you know, being seen, being visible, meeting clients that you don't otherwise see face to face at other times throughout the year. It's also being part of a community, and in a way you gain things that perhaps are hard to discern beforehand. But I think fundamentally, unless you are a pure retail brand that does not talk to the trade or talk to, you know, the dealers that are important to us, who sit between brand and client, if we operated solely out of our office or online, we wouldn't meet the people that we need to meet. If you were, say, an internet-based retail business, you would not have to come to a fair because all your money and effort are going to your web platform and your online marketing and or your offline marketing. But in our case, it's a hybrid business where we retail, we sell to trade, and we wholesale. Being at fairs and as well at different types of fairs does matter.
Paul de Zwart there, telling me about the new Work Series desk system from Another Country. Find out more at anothercountry.com. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to the show's editor, Alex Funnell, and engineer, Weidong Lin. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to write to me at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rhys Sheridan. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.